Hi, I'm Dr. John Gartner.
I'm Dr. Harry Siegel.
And this is Shrinking Trump. You know, I have to say, Harry, we were absolutely dumbfounded by the reaction to our show. I'm just going to say it. It's a hit. It was number two in political podcasts on Apple Podcasts. Now, let's just think about what this phenomenon means, okay? We're not celebrities. Okay, we're, let's face it, geriatric psychologists, and I don't mean we study geriatrics. I mean we're old. And don't say speak for yourself, because I know you're 2 years older than me. So it's not that. I would like to believe it's our charm and our beauty and our wit, but I don't think it's that either. I think it's that America is hungry for the truth about Trump's cognitive and psychological health. They know they're being gaslit. And they want to hear the truth from someone who knows what they're talking about. They want to hear a professional voice. And so I'm just so glad, obviously, that we've gotten this reaction. And I just want to make a promise to our audience. This is a place you'll be able to come and hear frank, honest, intelligent, educated discussions among professionals about Trump's mental health. You know, we're going to be interviewing today. I'm very excited about our guest, Dr. Lance Dotus, former professor of psychiatry at Harvard, and one of the original contributors to the original case of Donald Trump, dangerous case for Donald Trump, excuse me. But we're going to be looking at him from a whole bunch of different angles. You know, Dr. Dotus is really more interested in the personality disorder component than the dementia per se. But part of what we've been looking at, because this is a complex issue, is how the personality disorder and the dementia interact. And it's really quite fascinating. And there's a lot of psychodynamics as well as neurology to it. And that's actually part of what makes it really interesting. So anyway, without much further ado, one of the things that we're going to be doing regularly is reviewing Trump's demented and pathological behavior from each week. I sort of call it the dementia roundup. And what I said at the beginning of our last show and at the end is I made a prediction and I put myself on the line. There could be egg on my face, but I said he won't be able to go a week without behaving in a demented, overtly demented way. Why? Because he can't stop being demented. And so he can't stop displaying those behaviors. And he's getting worse because it's a progressive illness. So part of what I am saying, and in science, we call this a hypothesis. Okay, I'm making a prediction, a testable prediction, and you all can be part of the data collection. I am telling you he's going to get worse and worse, and we will never have a week where we don't have something to talk about in terms of his disturbed behavior.
I totally agree with John. And one thing I've noticed is, as far as the mainstream media is concerned, they are very reluctant to take up this issue. I know Dr. Gartner has tried to get different media outlets to think about it. I have as well. And there is a kind of rule that no one is really articulating. And I think that's why, another reason why our show last week had so many views. And frankly, John and I were individually on another YouTube show talking about this last month. And we had between us 2 million views. And yeah. Although I disagree with John, because I think our beauty and charm has something to do with it. no, seriously, it's because it's an issue. It's an idea. It's something that hasn't poked through the real mainstream media. And so here we are. And I think John is absolutely right. The idea of the dementia roundup. For me, one thing I found, at least last week, is John is very good at noting specific kinds of slippage. And he's very, very fluent about it. I'm going to have this other thing I'm going to keep calling to John and to all of us, which is that the way that Trump exhibits this early onset dementia and his personality disorder will be specific to him. Because that's true of all of us. No one is depressed in the same way. Mm-hmm. It's always different. That's because our brains are so complex. And as my old teacher used to say, our brains construct themselves from experience. And that's why we're all different.
That's excellent. And also, just to get back to your point about the press, I've started to say that dementia is like, when, remember George Carlin had those seven words you can't say on television? Well, now I think there's eight, because that you just can't say the word dementia. You can't ask if he has dementia. You can't ask if he's organically slipping. You're just not even allowed to ask the question. Except here on Shrinking Trump, where we do ask the question. And we're going to go over some videotapes. So remember last week I said, have no fear, folks. We will have lots of demented behavior to talk about next week. Well, guess what? What happened next? Wildwood, New Jersey happened. Okay.
They're emptying out their mental institutions into the United States, our beautiful country. And now the prison populations all over the world are down. They don't want to report that. The mental institution population is down because they're taking people from insane asylums and from mental institution. You know what the difference is, right? An insane asylum is a mental institution on steroids. Silence of the Lambs. Has anyone ever seen a Silence of the Lambs? The late, great Hannibal Lecter is a wonderful man. He oftentimes would have a friend for dinner. Remember the last scene? Excuse me, I'm about to have a friend for dinner. Is this poor doctor walked by? I'm about to have a friend for dinner, but Hannibal Lecter, congratulations, the late, great Hannibal Lecter. We have people that are being released into our country that we don't want in our country, and they're coming in totally unchecked, totally unvetted, and we can't let this happen.
Okay, so there's really so many levels, really so many levels to this disturbed little piece of verbiage that we just heard. The first is the tangentiality. Okay, the Silence of the Lambs comes from nowhere. Later, I think we're going to figure out what association was going on in his mind that brought him there. But obviously, it had nothing to do with the topic of immigration. Okay, it seems like a complete non sequitur. Okay, number two. I think what actually the connection was, he was talking about insane asylums. I guess he was trying to say they're letting all the people out of the insane asylums, you know, to immigrate to America. Made him think of a movie about an insane asylum, right? With Hannibal Lecter. So then he just goes from reality to the movie and then refers to Hannibal Lecter as the late, great Hannibal Lecter. Now there's a lot to unpack there. First, if he's late, that means he's a real person who died. So he is confusing a fictional character with a real person. Actually, you know, Ronald Reagan did this at the end when he was experiencing some dementia. He told some stories about a war movie that he said was, he told it as if it was a real anecdote, but it was actually a movie he was in or saw.
Yeah. I remember
this
that.
This happens, right? So I think the biggest thing is he's speaking about a fictional character as if he's real. Okay. And then this is to get to Harry's point about his personality. You know, so if somebody was demented and they started to imagine that a fictional character was real, someone they felt a connection to, an attachment to, or whatever, okay, but who does he pick? Who does Donald Trump pick? Who's his imaginary friend? A serial killer, but not just a serial killer, a really evil, diabolical serial killer who literally consumes, right? Destroys, you know, his victims by eating them. You know, Rick Wilson said, you know, everything Donald Trump touches dies. So it's like, not only is he a murderer, but he sort of destroys, you know, the essence of the people by consuming them.
But he's also a character who doesn't lose. At the end of that movie, he's out. I mean, Trump is quoting the last minute of the movie where you see him off to take revenge by eating the doctor who had put him in jail. So it also has that sense that Trump has that he can never be caught, that he will always win.
And he will always take revenge. You know, I mean, you know, he's explicitly saying he's running on the revenge ticket, right? You know, he's not running to be a good president for all of Americans. And this is how sick this is. He's running so that he can have the power to destroy the Americans he doesn't like.
On your redemption.
Yeah, but his redemption is through murder and destruction and evil, and you know what I mean? So that's why he's the late, great Hannibal Lecter. a real ego ideal. Well, okay, let's hear tape clip number two.
He's doing quite a good job. What do you think, Lawrence Taylor? Yes, doing a great job. Look at those two guys, OJ, Lawrence, my golfing friends. We don't have to agree on everything, but we...
Okay, so look over there. There's Lawrence Taylor with OJ. We play golf together. So look, there's bad news and there's good news. The bad news is that our student... I'm sorry. Start that one again. The bad news is that our esteemed colleague, Hannibal Lecter, is dead. I'm sorry. But the good news is OJ's alive. So there you go. It's amazing. There you have it. All right. Well, let's go listen to clip number three.
We're going to evict this man, the worst president by far. Jimmy Connors is good. He's also happy. Jimmy is a very happy man, both of them, because you know what? They want him out. Jimmy Carter had a bad reputation. Right now, he is considered a totally brilliant president by comparison. Right now, he is a totally brilliant president by comparison to Joe Biden. Joe Biden.
Okay. So President Connor was our 39th president. Another imaginary sort of scenario. Now, I will give him credit. He caught this one. You know what I mean?
He did.
A lot of times, right. So, and that's worth noting. It's sort of like the tie goes to the runner, maybe. You know, he did notice it. But I think I wanted to show this clip because, number one, the Jimmy Connor thing has been so talked about. You know, we couldn't leave it out of the Wildwood anthology. But also, it's interesting how, because he's such a shameless showman, that when he realizes he's made a mistake, he just riffs on it. I mean, this is one of his strengths. Let's face it. You know, so it's like, it's President Jimmy Connor. Carter. Well, you know, they're both happy. It's almost like a routine, right? Well, actually, they're both happy. You know, so he really can roll with that. Now let's look at a slip he made that he didn't correct.
Let's just use the term he recovered. That's what just happened. He recovered. And sometimes he does that. And sometimes he can go wild without a slip like this. But it's very important to remember that anytime another president is mentioned, it's already so stimulating for him that it can derail him because it's another president. Remember, slips are random.
Yeah.
Because nothing
because he has this sort of Oedipal rage at anyone who's been president. And so it disorganizes him. Yeah. And so he makes a mistake more often about the presidents than, say, something more, you know, neutral, you know, but he can't keep it straight. Who's president and, you know, who did what? And they're all bad and he's better than all of them, but they all kind of combine.
Or women who have fought with him, like Nikki Haley or Nancy. Doing it too.
Pelosi, the combined woman that he made in his brain, is the nemesis, right? Let's look at clip number four.
If you look at President, you take a look at Xi, President Xi of China, talking about Beijing. Now, they've got ships circling, they have planes, but they never were doing anything. President Xi of China with...
Okay. So, just in case you didn't catch this. Well, Beijing, you're confused. Beijing is a landlocked city, so they can't have ships circling. You always have to kind of reconstruct what he was thinking. I think he was thinking about Taiwan. But he couldn't keep it together. And here he didn't catch himself, right? He didn't catch the fact that he was talking about Beijing instead of Taiwan. It was kind of a big mistake to make. Are we talking about communist China or mainland or free China? That's just another example. And finally, let's just show one more clip from Wildwood, one more phonemic paraphasia, because he can't go a week without a phonemic paraphasia.
And they don't speak English. They're sitting in chairs listening to a teacher talk in English, and they don't speak English. And it will mean Biden's border invasion.
You know who else doesn't speak English? Donald Trump. Because that Borden is not a word. And what I've noticed with his phonemic paraphrasias, because he's made 30 or 40 of them, you know, he does this regularly and constantly and now increasingly. But there's also a way in which his phonemic paraphrasias are deteriorating. He can't even finish the non-word. You know what I mean? So if he, at least when he says Christmas instead of Christmas, he's, it's not a word, but it's a complete phoneme. He can't even complete the phoneme. You know what I mean? So it's border, but it's border. And then he gives up. He gives up in the middle of the word. He can't do it.
No, it's like a car. He goes into a one-way street. He has to back up and then go somewhere else. And he finds the connection, sort of. But it's, yeah, this was a subtle one. Just for folks who don't know, a phoneme is a piece of a word, like a syllable or a sound that makes up a word. And people with early onset dementia will sometimes begin a phoneme and not be able to complete the word with the next phoneme. And that's where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah. And I just want to make one more comment about his falling asleep in court this week, okay? Because it's sort of fallen off the radar, right? You know, at first, he got a lot of press. I'm glad it did. And then he was, you know, Sleepy Don, and he couldn't say Biden was Sleepy, you know, Joe anymore, and he was whatever. But now people aren't really talking about it. You know, this is what happens with our press, okay? After 1 week of falling asleep, now it's been normalized. Well, it's not normal. I just want to point out, as I did last week, that it's unprecedented. I know we use that word a lot with Trump, but I guarantee neither you nor any of your lawyer friends or anybody you know can imagine or remember one example of a defendant falling asleep in court. When you're in court, you're in the dock, your adrenaline's running, you're trying to be on your best behavior. There are people around you trying to structure you to be on your best behavior, okay? And people have come up with all of these explanations. Oh, he's tired, he has contempt for the judge, he's on drugs, he's not on drugs. If that were true, people would be falling asleep right and left, but they don't. It's unheard of. No one can remember it ever happening. And you know why? Yeah. People with dementia fall asleep uncontrollably during the day. And even though he knows he's being ridiculed for it, he can't stop. He cannot maintain consciousness. He doesn't have control over his basic ability to be conscious or unconscious, his basic biological functions.
I hear you. And I think you're right. But also, he's someone who needs constant stimulation. He's known for falling asleep in meetings and break. He needs it every minute. And here he is in a courtroom listening to Michael Cohen talk about everything that he claims Trump did. And Trump is closing his eyes. So on the one hand, it may well be the dementia that he's falling asleep, but also his utter denial and his wish to flout an institution. I mean, let's not forget that sociopathic part of Trump, who really likes to soil every institution he can find. He does.
No, I remember. Go ahead. No, I agree, but I was just going to say is that, you know how many sociopaths are on trial at any given day? They're not falling asleep. Okay. I'm saying this is the first time in your life or my life we've ever seen a demented defendant. That's why he's the only defendant we've ever seen fall asleep. Okay, I'm going to stick with that theory. But anyway, Harry, you had a couple of things that you wanted to talk about.
Yes.
Donald Trump did a very interesting interview with Hugh Hewitt this week. Yes. And actually, you wanted to read some of these excerpts from the interview, and we're going to show it on the screen. So go ahead, Harry. I'm really fascinated.
Before we show the slide. So those of you who don't know, Hugh Hewitt is a very conservative talk show host who's had a very interesting kind of conversion to being a Trump supporter. There were times when he was skeptical. And I found listening to this radio interview and then reading the transcript to be maybe very uncomfortable, because Hewitt is constantly telling Trump, you did so great with this, you did so great with this. It's not a real interview. But what's important to remember is this is in the morning, and I've been arguing that Trump is a bit better in the morning than he is late at night, which is true with people with early onset dementia. But there are still linguistic problems. So let's take a look at the first one. So Hewitt says, let me talk to you about the debate challenge. President Biden just issued you a debate challenge for June and September with the Veeps talking in July. Do you accept? Oh, Trump says, oh, absolutely. I've been trying to get, you know, he's issuing it. I wonder whether or not he shows up, because, you know, He also challenged me to golf. So I'm a very good golfer. He can't hit a ball 50 yards. He said, I'll give him three aside, but he knows he'll never play. This is sort of like that, I think, but I hope not, because I really think he has to debate. He might as well get it over with. Probably should do it early so that he can, you know, because he's not going to get any better every day. So when you think about this clip, notice that it's a bit tangential. It's not bad, but
somehow we got to golf.
The golf story. I mean, he's going off into golf to say that he's a good golfer and he's better than Biden. And also he says Biden wants to get it done early. And it made me think, I think he means early in the campaign, because June, they're going to do it in June. That's very early for a presidential debate. But I'm wondering if Trump wasn't also thinking about early in the day, because Trump is going to, it's interesting, you know, when you see the pundits about this, they're all talking about, oh, Biden's going to have a hard time. Trump doing a 2-hour debate without an audience at night? We'll have to see how that works. Okay, so the next one is my favorite. If you could play.
Let me get this one. I think I'm going to do a Harry on this one, because I think there's a lot of rich psychodynamic material here. First of all, he says, I wonder whether he shows up. Now, I've made a prediction. I don't know if I'm right, okay? But I'm making a prediction. I don't think Trump is going to debate. I think it's a head fake, just like he wants to testify and he wants to release his tax returns, but they won't let me, okay? I think he's going to keep accusing Biden of being afraid to debate. And then he will back out. He'll say it's rigged. He'll say he doesn't like the moderators. He's going to do a rally that night instead. Okay. So all I'm saying is, when he says Biden's not going to, because, you know, with Trump, you can know everything you need to know about Donald Trump by seeing what he's accusing everyone else of, because it's practically autobiographical, right? His protection, right? So when he says Biden's going to be afraid to show up to the debate, he means he's afraid to show up to the debate. Okay. Also, when he says, you know, he's not getting any better every day. First of all, I love that phraseology, because he's the one who's getting worse every day, and he's so worse, he can't say it properly. He can't say he's getting worse every day. He has to say it in this disfluent and tactically tortured way. He's not getting any better every day. Okay, so there's the, again, projection, okay? But I have to say, and also I think that the shift to golf is also, you've pointed out that when something challenges his ego or his self-esteem, right, he pivots away from it, right? And that's why he's so challenged by the presidents. Well, I think he knows that he's not even capable of debating. I think he knows he's too impaired to debate. I think he knows that. But what he's trying to do is then in his mind shift to a competition he is good at, or at least better, you know. So it's like, you know, oh, okay, well, you want to debate me? Well, how about we play golf then, huh? Nah, you wouldn't be. I mean, he was at golf. He's afraid to. I offered, but he wouldn't. I would have given him three.
You know, you may be right. I think he will debate, because I think he's too afraid of looking like a coward. I do, but we'll see. I mean, I see how it could go your way as well. I hope not. I think it's be important.
Oh, I hope not also, because I think this could really be very revealing and helpful. Also, we do have to make a reference to Rain Man. I'm an excellent golfer.
Okay. Okay. Sorry. Can we see the next? I want to see the next clip. Okay. All right. Now, this is really extraordinary. So Hewitt says, when you became friends with Nixon in New York, did you ever talk presidential politics? How he ended up resigning, how he won so big in 72. Did you ever discuss it with him? Now, that's a very good question, right? Mm-hmm. And this is how Trump responds.
Not a good answer.
His life to me was very sad. It was a very sad life. You know, I got to know him really more when he was out. He watched me on his wife watched me on the Phil Donahue show. And she wrote a letter, which I have. She wrote a letter, which he gave to me, saying that he wrote me a letter saying that my wife, Pat, who he really loved, by the way, really loved, but that, you know, he sort of had very few friends. you know, she was his friend, but he wrote a letter. My wife, Pat, said that someday, if you wanted to be, you'll be president of the United States. It's become somewhat of a famous letter. It's from him explaining she watched me on the Phil Donahue show. Do you remember that one? All right. I think that is really, really, really concerning. I mean, this, yeah. he's mixing up who wrote the letter. Was it Pat? Was it Nixon? And that Pat said, but Nixon said? And it's all about, he doesn't answer the question. Did Nixon ever tell you about resigning? Did Nixon ever tell you? He just says he was sad. And then he goes on with an anecdote about someone telling him he should be president.
Yes. Isn't that interesting? Right?
So you see the narcissism, and I have to remind the audience, it's so easy to hear these terms and not know what they mean. Someone suffering a narcissistic personality disorder is holding him or herself together with grandiose thoughts and boasts and getting adoration from people. Because if they don't get that, there's the fear they're going to fall apart and become nothing. So they have to keep maintaining the grandiosity and the admiration all the time. And here's an example where Trump is talking to an incredibly sycophantic and supportive interviewer. And yet he still has to go to this story that someone said he could be president someday. But look at how he loses sight of who wrote the letter. And this, I think, is the signs of the early onset dementia, mild cognitive impairment that you are so good at pointing out. Here it is. It's not phonemic paraphasia. It's different though, but it is disorganized.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we have to, I don't know how anyone can hear or read that interview and not see it.
And this is where the press is. And the funny thing is, you're right. You know, Hugh Hewitt is such a sycophant, but it's all being normalized. Oh, well, let me ask the next question. But here he is, so syntactically tortured that it is literally incomprehensible. You just can't figure out who's doing what to whom in these sentences. We're not picking on, you know, this word is wrong, or it doesn't make any sense. And also, I think this is again where we get into the confabulation. When people have dementia, they have this blank slate where there's a lot of forgotten memories, and they fill them in with false memories because they need some context for their daily life. So I don't know if there was ever a letter, okay, or who wrote the letter, but basically this is what Donald Trump remembers about Richard Nixon. He saw me on TV, or his wife saw me on TV, and they said, you could be president. That's what's in the Nixon box in his mind, that Nixon admired him and Nixon told him he could be president. And so he's making up a story about Nixon loving him and thinking he's so great. On a good day, and we're going to talk a lot with Dr. Dotus about this, because he is one of the people who started, the first people to talk about his psychopathy and his lying. On a good day, he's just lying, okay? But a lie has to be organized and comprehensible in order to deceive, okay? Yes. If a lie is word salad and it's a bizarre, incomprehensible story, that's not going to get you anywhere. That's not going to advantage him anywhere. That is the formal workings of a broken brain.
I'm with you. Absolutely.
All right.
Very sad, very troubling.
Yeah, and very dangerous for the country.
Well, yes.
There's that. Well, listen, why don't we bring in our guest, Dr. Lance Dotus? We've been talking about him, and I know he's been listening. Hello. Hi, Lance. How are you?
Hi, Lance. How are you?
Good to see you. Well, so Dr. Dotus is a retired assistant professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He's a former training analyst at the Boston Psychoanalytic. He was one of the original contributors to the book, The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump. But that's not all. That's not all. Because Lance Dotus made history on February 21st, 2017, when he and a Dr. John Gardner appeared on the Lawrence O'Donnell Show, the first mental health professionals to appear on cable news to talk about Donald Trump's mental health. So Lawrence O'Donnell broke that ice. He's really the one that made the history. He had us on. And then for reasons which are completely incomprehensible and beyond me, Lawrence likes Lance best. Because he's had me on a couple of times, but he's had Lawrence on like, what, five times has he had you on?
Something like that.
So Lawrence always liked him best. So I'm still processing that. But anyway, Lance, I know you've been listening to us, and you know, as we've been kind of talking about the way in which his dementia sort of interacts with his personality disorder. And so I remember one of the things you said on that show that I've quoted many times because it was so wise is you said, Donald Trump tells two kinds of lies. One is the traditional lie to deceive people, and the other are the lies he tells himself. So at any given moment, it's hard to tell whether he's telling a grandiose lie or it's now risen to the level of a delusion, a grandiose delusion. And actually, he kind of whips himself up into a delusion. That's what malignant narcissists do. So they create these lies. They fake it until they can delude it, until they can believe it. Okay. But now we've really got a diagnostic multi-axial pickle on our hands, because yeah. Now there's a third kind of untruth that he tells, which is confabulated stories. So,
yeah. Well, one of the ways they make each other worse, the dementia and the narcissistic disorder, is that dementia itself is a narcissistic blow. It's very hard to recognize that you have a loss of control of your own mind or any other aspect of yourself. So when you have a person who is so narcissistically disordered, as Trump is, and he, to the extent he recognizes that there's some loss, it's intolerable. So I think that adds to the lie and the loss of reality testing in both ways that you're describing. On the one hand, he can't stand to have it. So he needs to deny that something bad has happened, which adds to his ignorance. He's a very ignorant man because he needs to know more than anybody. So he doesn't learn. I remember the time when he was on the nuclear vessel and he told the captain to use a different launching system for the missiles because he knew better than the captain of the nuclear vessel. That was very early. That was, I think, his first year that he was president. So he just doesn't know things, but he knows less and less because he can't add to knowledge or correct the things that he doesn't know, because that would be a narcissistic blow also. So I think that having someone who is so limited be demented on top of that leads to an exponential. It's geometric, the advance, because each makes the other worse. And then his sadism, you know, his cruelty to others, his uncaring about others, is very bad. When he is more likely to act on that, it's worse than he will actually attack people, which of course he does, and he threatens to attack people. So if you add to that characterological defect of empathy with others, a dementing process, which makes him more likely to be impulsive, to act suddenly because doesn't have the cognitive ability to figure it all out, he becomes exponentially more dangerous to be harmful to others impulsively. And then, of course, if there was ever a chance to correct it, he can't, because that would mean acknowledging that he had done something wrong. So it's a disaster in waiting for all of these reasons. And I you know, I'm so glad that you're bringing these together, John, because I completely agree with both of you that the press has dropped the ball almost entirely. A few people have not, but almost everybody is denying the massive disability that he has, and in mistakenly comparing that with Biden, who simply has normal aging.
Yeah. I think that's such a good point that if you can't acknowledge a mistake before you start to suffer dementia, then that becomes one more thing that you have to deny. Yeah. And it's also must be generating a lot of anxiety, right? Because he knows he's losing his ability to find words or tell stories or keep things straight.
Yeah, I think it works. The worse it gets, the worse it gets. I think that the more he has, the less ability he has, the more he needs to deny to himself and to others that he has any fault at all. So it increases, which brings up the question also about the debate. I'm afraid John may be right. I hope he's not. But I could see Trump opting out of the debate because he knows what's going to happen, especially, as you said, with no audience for 2 hours. I mean, in the last election, we all remember how he yelled and he interrupted constantly and the moderator could do very little about it. Well, I think it's going to be that much worse now because he will be increasingly unhinged. The more unhinged he is, the more unhinged he is because he has to cover it up with being more paranoid and insane.
I think that's a great point. I think that's a great point, Lance. And, you know, one of the things about him is he really retreats to his safe spaces, right? His rallies, Mar-a-Lago, right? He likes to be in those safe bubbles where he's getting that admiration and adoration, those narcissistic supplies that Harry was talking about. So, you know, you notice, for example, I'm very active on Twitter, and I was so upset when, you know, Elon Musk bought Twitter, I still am, but then when he gave Trump his account back. But he never posted. He posted once. He posted his criminal picture. He posted his mugshot because, again, he likes to take his badness and somehow turn it into a virtue. You know, the late great Hannibal Lecter. You know, I'm evil and I'm proud. Go evil. But he doesn't.
Whatever he does has to be great.
Bad. He doesn't want to be narcissistically injured. And I think at some level he knows the debate would be a massive narcissistic injury because he would make a fool of himself.
Yes.
Except he also may not want to accept that fear either. In other words, he could be defending against the possibility of collapsing in a debate because he is also telling himself that he does everything perfectly. So I do think it is sort of teeter-tottering. If we go either way.
No, it's not teeter-tottering. Come on, don't you know how Trump's mind works now? He's going to say that it's rigged, that they put some liberal, you know, Democrat to interview him, and he's not going to fall for that. And so he'll blame the debate commission and everybody else for why he can't debate. Okay, so everyone keeps saying, oh, well, he's going to be in this box, right? He can't. My friend George Conway was on TV last night trying to goad him into testifying. He sent me the clip. And he's like, Donald, you know, I'm looking you in the eyes right now. He's saying this on TV. If you're not a pussy, if you're not afraid, you'll get on that stand and tell your truth. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. He'll say he wants to testify, but then he won't testify.
I think the debate is different, but we'll see.
I was thinking
about what Lance was saying. I just was remembering. I mean, there's so many things to remember about Trump. But do you remember? Was it Mississippi where he claimed the hurricane had passed over? So he took a Sharpie on a weather map and he simply extended it. I mean, it's funny, and people thought of that as, you know, kind of amusing. I thought that was really disturbing. I mean, that's something a 6-year-old would do.
Yeah. Well, reality doesn't mean much to him. You know, he is always willing to sacrifice reality for his grandiosity. Right. So I think that's what, you know, what John is saying about the possibility that he will say, look, I can't possibly debate because of the following reasons that I've made up. Right. That's just what he does. And some of his followers will say that's him being strong. They buy exactly the image that he wishes to create both inside of himself and outside. Look how tough he is. He's not going to let these bastards control him.
Exactly. It won't be weakness. It'll be strength that he refuses to debate.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have to make sense. You know, the great thing about not having to be accountable to any form of reality is you can turn corners very easily. There's no contradiction you can't get around.
That's right.
That would be nice, wouldn't it, to be able to just create reality? But now I think what's happening is, and this is what makes this conversation so interesting, especially with you, Lance, because you're one of the original people who pointed out this duality of truth and reality in his world. Now we have a third level, where he's forgetting, you know, his memories are deteriorating. And so he's not lying. He's confabulating. He's making stuff up. He's like in Gettysburg, you know, where he made up that quote from Robert E. Lee. It was bizarre. It wasn't going to make him look good or win any followers, you know, but he just was had to say something. And so I think he was looking at a hill and he said, yeah, he said, don't fight. Don't go up the hill. Don't fight in the hill.
An Irish accent.
Right.
I still can't believe that.
It totally made up and bizarre. And so actually Trump's psychopathy has been the greatest camouflage for his dementia.
I agree.
Right? Because he says something crazy. Oh, well, you know, he's just lying again. There he goes again. You know, there he goes again, lying. Right. As if lying, you know, oh, as long as he's only lying, we're okay. As long as he's, but you know what? On Donald Trump's best day, when he is the clearest and his best self, he is a total psychopathic liar. Okay, yes. That's on a good day. That's when his brain is working well enough to deceive other people.
Well, I really appreciated that quote that you brought up about from Nixon, the quote where he's getting the letters confused and everything. That is especially, to me, it's especially clear how demented he can be. I wish that that quote could be sent, that whole paragraph could be sent to the Times or someplace else to just let people read it. Because I wasn't aware of that one. And it's especially clear that he can't formulate ideas cognitively.
No, and especially if it's about another president.
Right.
Then the circuits get overwhelmed with rage and anxiety.
Yeah.
It seems to me.
There can be only one president. It's like when he was God for a while, if you remember, he still is. You know, he looked up to heaven and he talked about himself as the leader of the Jewish people or something like that. There's only one God. So, you know, that's him.
Who else could it be?
You know, Lance, you brought up another point that I think is underappreciated, which is because he is so impulsive baseline, right? Premorbidly, as far as the dementia is concerned. And there's no line he won't cross, right? There's nothing he won't say. There's nothing too outrageous. There's nothing too coarse. There's nothing too horrible to say. If that's your baseline, then you start becoming more impulsive and disorganized. In a way, again, there's camouflage, right? But I think that what people are noticing, people who are close to him have said he's not the same person he was 4 years ago. He does seem more impulsive and confused and disorganized. So one of the things we were talking about last time is he was cursing out loud in court. You know, when Cohen or Stormy Daniels was testifying and the judge had to admonish him. He's kind of losing control in these more basic ways. Maybe you could say something about what that might look like. You started to talk about it. You did say something about what would that look like if we had a President Trump, right, who has really lost all impulse control?
Yeah. Well, when he was in the, I must have been 2016 or 2017, when he first entered office, he fired all those missiles in the Middle East, if you remember. He was the only president to ever do that. He sent off a barrage of high-powered missiles, and I don't think it did very much. But right away, he was saying, look, I can do this, so I will do this. And it was, and people said to him when they were asking, he was asking about the use of nuclear weapons. He said, why not? And people had to explain to him that, you know, you can't do that because there are consequences. His nature is to be impulsive, combined with his ignorance and his narcissism and now his dementia. It means, yes, I think he is an extraordinary risk of pressing the button, basically, which I think was
true back in 2016. Press button in a fit of pique or confusion.
Yeah. And if people try to talk him out of it, he'll say, I know best.
And actually, he unilaterally has that power. No one can stop him, actually.
I think when he was president, though, because I think Trump's dementia wasn't, I didn't, it really has been coming on the last few years, I think. You notice that he never even got close to committing troops anywhere. Because Trump knew that his base did not want to go to war.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Now, I always thought he'll ask them to go to war for him, and he did. But he wasn't get anywhere near a war because he wanted to preserve his standing with them. Now, if he's president, it's the impulsivity and the lack of self-regulation is even more dangerous.
Well, I think there's another factor too, which is we have to remember that Trump is Putin's bitch. Okay, that he is a Russian asset, that he has done everything to make Russia great and work against the interests of the United States. If Putin cloned himself and became president, he wouldn't have acted differently than Trump did as far as Russia's interests are concerned. So Russia doesn't want America fighting for America, okay? And Trump has already signaled that the worst thing he's going to do in some ways is not going to war. It's that he won't go to war. He's already said that if a European nation is attacked by Russia, we will not defend them. Unless they paid their dues, which there aren't even any dues for NATO. So it's just a made up thing. So he's already announcing that his lack of military action will be treasonous. Okay. That by being lame, it's like the way they kept the National Guard from protecting the Capitol. Well, now we're going to keep America from protecting Europe. And look, there's a red team and there's a blue team on this planet. And, you know, basically everyone's wearing uniforms. They're not hard to see. The people who are wearing the red uniforms are Russia, the Republicans, and Saudi Arabia, and they're goons, and they're oligarchs, you know, Elon Musk and goons like that, who know no nationality, who just want to be, again, the conspiracy was that the Jews have this shadowy cabal that we're trying to take over. Well, these guys have a shadowy cabal, and they're trying to take over the world, okay, these money men, okay, and we know who's allied with who, okay, and Trump stole those documents. This is beyond the psychology, but the point is it relates to his having no limits and his being so evil and his really having no loyalty to the country and only caring about himself, that he would betray the country so wantonly and so with so little remorse. He stole all the boxes and boxes of documents, including nuclear documents, okay? He kept them in the bathroom of Mar-a-Lago, okay, for months. And then he had a Saudi-backed golf tournament at Mar-a-Lago. Now, I would bet dollars to donuts that Saudi spies went to the bathroom and photographed every damn page of those nuclear and secret documents. And they're already in Moscow, every single page. I believe
Well, wait. I think we're heading off into speculation that we really. I want us to stay with the psychology if we can, because it may well be that Trump wanted to take those documents and eventually monetize them in some way. But what's pretty clear is that he liked showing them to people. I have a plan to invade Iran. See how important I was. Those tapes show that, and people have said he liked having them in his office. This was more about, you see, the thing about Trump that's so important, and I think maybe Lance will agree with me, the thing about a narcissistic personality disorder, and this goes back to my idea that they have to keep themselves together with grandiosity, or else they fall apart. That means there's no long game. It means every present moment is as important as a future present moment, right?
Right.
So I want these documents because I want to be able to show people that I got them from the Oval Office and I'm still president. And so every moment is about getting the admiration and the adulation and the reinforcement to keep that narcissistic bubble together so it doesn't break.
Yeah. I think it's both monetizing them and, you know, adorning himself with them and displaying.
I would argue that the adorning comes way first. There may be the idea that he can sell them later on, but Trump is all about the present moment.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's any. I don't know if there's any difference between those. I think the reason that money is so important to him is because it makes him great in his own mind, right? The more money I have,
I knew you'd tie it
up. He's always admired other rich people. Doesn't matter. I mean, morality is not an issue for him, right? But it's just having more and being more.
Absolutely. Well, Lance, money, I think you've tied it together for us as you do so well. We're going to have to say goodbye because we have to do our little shrink wrap segment. I'm very grateful that you came, Lance. It's so good to see you again. Thank you for joining us.
Certainly. Thanks so much, Lance. Really enjoyed it.
Well, Harry, what did we learn today?
Is it time for the shrink wrap?
It's time to
What did we learn today? Here's what I think we learned today. That for this, our second show, as clinicians, trying to educate you, the public, the culture, that to understand someone, it takes a while to build a model of who they are, to be able to understand how different parts of them, of a person, their desires, their fears, their ambitions, their cognitive distress and distortions, how they fit together, because each person is really different. And so today, I think what we're starting to see now is Hannibal Lecter is not a random association. Having cognitive problems when mentioning another president like Jimmy Carter, not Connors, or Nixon, whoever wrote the letter, that we're starting to gather some ideas about how Trump is organized. And so I'm hoping that over time with each of our podcasts, everyone will start to have a more and more complex and integrated sense of who Trump is and how this process of mild cognitive impairment is affecting him and how that plays into his personality. I think you, John, I think you and I can do that.
Yeah, I think we can too. And you know, you made a very good point when you said every dementia is different, kind of like every snowflake, kind of like every person, you know. And I mentioned my uncle before, but I have an uncle who has dementia, and he was a past life regression therapist and a yoga teacher and a gentle, enlightened soul. And I speak to my aunt on the phone and I hear him in the background. He seems a little confused. My aunt just redirects him and he's very, okay, honey. You know, he's very, still very sweet, very, he's a good person. You know, so in some way, in dementia veritas, in dementia, we see the unvarnished truth of someone's soul, you know, without all of the cognitive ability to dissemble. Okay. It exposes the real you. So either you could be a past life regression therapist like my uncle, or you can be Hannibal Lecter.
Yes. We are seeing, we're seeing sides of Donald Trump that even he isn't aware of.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And we will be coming back every week to do that.
I'll be here.
All right, me too. Well, I guess we'll see you all next week.
Take care.